You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, May 22nd, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Greetings from the north of Alaska. We are in Anchorage right now, coming to you live following my appearance at the Cannabis Classic that took place this weekend. Coming up in hour two, we've got a very special live hour two for you, where we've got winners and presenters from the Cannabis Classic Awards right here in Anchorage. They'll be joining us right here in this studio to talk all about this weekend's festivities. But also coming up on today's show, we've got some video from this weekend's festivities. My buddy Jonah Tacoma from Dab Stars led an epic 420 celebration. We'll get to that at the bottom of this hour. But coming up on this hour as well, we've got our cannabis headline news. We've got all sorts of federal bill updates to get to. Also, we've got our Cannabis Medicine Today segment, where we'll hear from Karen Hendrickson. She's with Alaska's Division of Environmental Health. She presented at the Cannabis Classic on the use of pesticides on cannabis crops. Also coming up on the show, the Northeast Cannabis Chronicles. We'll get an update on what's happening in Vermont from Eli Harrington with Hetty Vermont and Vermontawana, and we'll end things up with the Radical Rant, where real people are getting busted for this allegedly legal in all 50 states CBD oil. That's all coming up. The news is next. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platshorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the conservative agenda, minus the hypocrisy.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me for A Sensible Future from Students for Sensible Drug Policy every other Tuesday here on the Marijuana Agenda. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Monday, May 22nd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. In federal news, Tom Angel reports that on Friday, the Trump administration relaunched the Office of National Drug Control Policy's website, which had been offline since the inauguration. It includes information about the high-intensity drug trafficking areas and drug-free communities programs, suggesting that cuts floated earlier may not happen. Also this week on Capitol Hill, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions will testify about the Justice Department's budget request before the relevant House and Senate Appropriations Subcommittees on Wednesday and Thursday, respectively. The appearances could be good opportunities for supportive members of Congress to press him about marijuana policy. Federal legislation to aid the burgeoning cannabis industry continues to pick up support in Congress. In the House, the bill to increase marijuana businesses' access to banks got three new co-sponsors, bringing the total to 35. The bill to create a federal tax structure for legal marijuana got two new co-sponsors, bringing the total to five. The bill to undo the 280E tax penalty on marijuana businesses got two new co-sponsors, bringing the total to 14. The bill to let military veterans get medical cannabis recommendations from Departments of Veterans Affairs doctors got three new co-sponsors, bringing the total to 11. The bill to narrow the gap between state and federal marijuana policies got two new co-sponsors, bringing the total to 5. And the bill to repeal a law threatening loss of federal funding for states that don't suspend driver's licenses from people with drug convictions got four new co-sponsors, bringing the total to 9. Republican Governor Phil Scott is expected to decide soon whether he will allow the state to become the first in the country to legalize marijuana by legislative act rather than by a citizen referendum. Scott says he's not philosophically opposed to marijuana legalization, but he has concerns about keeping it away from children. He could choose to sign the bill, let it become law without his signature, or veto it. He must decide by Wednesday. Under the legislation, small amounts of marijuana would be legal to possess and grow for anyone over age 21. Larger amounts would remain illegal. A commission would develop a proposal to tax and regulate marijuana that would be ready for the legislature to consider next year ahead of the implementation date. An Ohio Supreme Court justice who's mulling a run for governor thinks it's time for the state to decriminalize marijuana. Justice William O'Neill, the lone Democrat holding an Ohio statewide office, said making marijuana legal is working in Colorado, and doing it in Ohio would bring hundreds of millions of dollars in sales taxes. O'Neill announced earlier this year that he's considering stepping down and making a run for governor, but he doesn't plan on making a decision until the end of the year. In a speech mixed with his analysis of last year's presidential election and thoughts about problems facing the state, O'Neill said he not only wants to legalize marijuana, but also to release all nonviolent marijuana offenders from prison. Denver's Mayor Michael Hancock's administration banned the organizer of this year's 420 rally from hosting the event for 3 years, citing a series of violations at the marijuana celebration. The city outlined five concerns in its 11-page letter to the 420 event organizers, enough to trigger the 3-year ban for future event permits. The violations of the city's public event policy included 4 noise complaints, untimely trash removal, limited security guards, unlicensed food vendors, and street closures. Police incidents included the arrests of 2 individuals after at least one shot was heard a block away from Civic Center Park, 5 arrests at the event, civil citations given to 20 people, and a report at 10:45 p.m. of a man threatening the post-event cleanup crew. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper stopped in Cortez Sunday to sign a bill protecting hemp farmers who use water stored in federal reservoirs. Colorado legalized growing hemp in 2014, but it is still banned at the federal level, creating complications when water from a federal project is used to water it. Senate Bill 117 says Colorado water right holders have the right to use it on hemp if the person is registered by the state to grow hemp for commercial or research purposes. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Monday, May 22nd, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about teen drug use from Robert Platschorn's TheSilverTour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from celebstoner.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Welcome to Cannabis Medicine Today. For over 90 years, cannabis was listed in the U.S. pharmacopoeia as medicine. Since California became the first state to restore cannabis as medicine in 1996, almost every U.S. state now recognizes some form of cannabis as medicine. But since 1971, the federal government has steadfastly denied the medicinal benefits of herbal cannabis. Join us now as we take a look at the state of cannabis medicine today.
This weekend at the Sullivan Center in Anchorage, Alaska, I moderated the presentations in the seminar tent for the Cannabis Classic Expo and Industry Awards. Speaking on Sunday was Karen Hendrickson, a pesticide program coordinator with Alaska's Division of Environmental Health, on the federal regulations concerning the use of pesticides on cannabis crops.
All right, so the first thing I'm thinking about is it safe? And that's really the bottom line, right? That should be the most important thing. The second thing, because I'm a regulator, we're going to talk a little bit about which pesticides are legal and how you figure that out. But I'm saving that for last because it's really the least important part. Okay, so is it safe? Pesticides are designed to kill things. They're dangerous. Some things are more dangerous than others, but, you know, we want to make sure that we're not doing damage to people with the chemicals we're using, or yourselves, or the people working for you. Okay, first thing we don't know. There's a bunch of stuff we don't know when it comes to pesticides and marijuana. The first thing is, if there's residue on the plant and you burn it, how does that pesticide change? Does it undergo some chemical changes? We don't know. How come we don't know? There's only really one other crop that's burned, and it's tobacco, right? Does anybody care if there's a little pesticide on tobacco? There's 20 other things in cigarettes that can kill you. Nobody's studying what happens to pesticides on tobacco. So we don't really know very much about pesticides. There's not a lot of study done on what happens to pesticides when they burn. So now we're breathing them into our lungs. For example, Eagle 20, it's a very common fungicide, very commonly used. It turns into hydrogen cyanide when you burn it. That is not something you want to inhale into your lungs. Okay, so some things that we think it's commonly used on other plants, we can use it here. Probably don't want to. All right. The other thing is, not only is it safe to inhale when it's burned, but is it just safe to inhale pesticides? There's not a lot of crops that are grown out there where people are inhaling these things into their lungs. Your lungs absorb things directly in your bloodstream. When you, let's say you eat some broccoli with some pesticide left on it, it goes through your digestive system and it's absorbed slowly. It gets filtered through your liver and your kidneys. When things go into your lungs, they go directly, bam, right into your bloodstream, right into your system. So it's a lot faster absorption. It's an exposure route that's more risky. So we don't know that much about how pesticides are absorbed when they come in through the lung system. So that's another thing we don't know about. And it's hard to know, you know, which things are safe because there's not a lot of science to back up our decisions. And contrary to a lot of, you know, decisions being made lately, science is really how we want to make our choices when it comes to using chemicals. Okay, we don't know how much pesticide residue stays on marijuana. There's a whole lot of things that go into how much pesticide residue is still on a plant, from how much sun or photo decomposition is going on, the humidity, the soil, the organic matter in the soil, the plant itself, how much is absorbed, how quickly it processes. These things are studied in detail on every other crop. We don't have that science on marijuana. So we can spray something on corn and know how much is going to be on corn 20 days later. We don't have that data for marijuana. We don't know. So most crops have a pre-harvest interval for each pesticide. And so here's an example of a label, and it's this product is for corn, a lot of other things too, but for the corn, it says, do not apply within 30 days of harvest for forage grain and stover, whatever kind of corn stover is. But now if you're doing ears of corn and forage type corn, it's 14 days. They've done enough study and gotten enough data to know that you need 30 days to process one type of corn and 40 days for the marijuana residue to abate on another kind of corn. They know these things for all the other crops. We don't know these things on marijuana. We don't have the data. And anybody who has questions, jump in, because I will just keep going. Okay. If we're concentrating down oils, some pesticides might dissipate through that process. Some pesticides might actually get concentrated along with the oil. So instead of having just one part per billion, if you concentrate things down, now you might have 100 parts per billion. That's a concern because we don't really know what happens when you concentrate down in oils. Okay, another thing we don't know is most plants are not grown for medicinal purposes, and in a lot of cases we're using marijuana for medical uses. We don't know if people are, you know, more susceptible if they're dealing with cancer or they're dealing with other issues. So that's something else that we have to think about when we're thinking about what's a safe pesticide. We don't know. So we can look at tobacco. Tobacco gets smoked, but, you know, tobacco, like I said, has all these other things that are really hazardous to health. There aren't a lot of studies on tobacco and pesticides.
So are they using pesticides on tobacco and not telling people?
Oh, they're using tons of pesticides on tobacco.
Of course they are, 'cause they can.
Pretty much every crop in the U.S., unless it's organic, tons of pesticides. And even the organic crops, there's a lot of organic approved pesticides. So, tobacco probably has a lot of pesticides on it, but nobody's studying that. Okay, there are some other kinds of plants that are distilled down, like mint or citrus oils. You need to get some of those essential oils, but they're not studied the same way. And, bottom line is marijuana is not the same as tobacco. It's not the same as mint. It's not the same, and we don't have the data. So we don't know what's safe. And that's why everywhere you look at Colorado, they have these complicated, you know, guidelines for which pesticides can be used. You go to Washington, Oregon, same thing. I mean, we, all of us in the regulatory community are going through the same thing here. It's like, how can we tell people what to use when we don't actually have the data to know what's safe? So that's a big, huge problem. We don't know what's safe, so I'm just going to go back through it. You know, we don't know if it changes the pesticide composition when it burns. We don't know if it's safe to inhale and get absorbed through the lungs. We don't know how much pesticide stays on the plant compared to other plants. We don't know what happens when we concentrate things down into oils. We don't know how much pesticide is safe for medical patients. So basically what I'm saying is just be really careful what you put on your plants. And we could talk about what things, some guidelines to look at, but the bottom line is you got to be careful because we just don't know what's safe. All right, questions about that aspect of things? Because now I'm going to get into, like, the legal parts of it.
Like, when food gets sprayed out with the pesticides, like, our system can filter, right? You know,
Right, so he's talking about, you know, pesticides on foods and how our body absorbs it, and it's filtered through your kidney and liver. And it's true. Your lungs absorb things so much more quickly directly into your bloodstream. We don't have studies to show how pesticides act when they're absorbed through bloodstreams. So that's a big safety concern. And one other thing you missed when I showed a picture of Eagle 20, which is a fungicide a lot of people use, and it turns into hydrogen sulfide when it when it's burned. So pesticides, hydrogen cyanide. Sorry, yes, not hydrogen sulfide. Yeah. Pesticides are designed to kill things. Well, we have a lot of studies and data on things like how long it takes the pesticide residue to dissipate from other crops. We don't have that study on marijuana. We have a lot of studies on the health effects at different levels for other crops. We just don't have it for marijuana. They don't study it on tobacco much. There's a lot of lobbying there, and there's a lot of, there's a lot of money. Yeah. Okay, so we basically established that we don't know what's safe. We don't have data. So let's talk about what's legal. And you guys are all really familiar with, you know, the federal versus the state, and it makes things complicated for us. So then the EPA is in a really interesting position. EPA approves pesticides. They do the studies. They figure out what's the safe levels. And they're a federal agency, but they can't approve anything for a product that's illegal federally, but it's being grown in all these states. So EPA is in a strange position. I was just in Portland, and we toured a really nice grow facility as part of our pesticides regulatory work. The EPA folks couldn't go with us. All the state folks could go. But because it's illegal federally, the EPA folks had to pretend like they didn't know what was going on. So they're in a strange position, trying to advise us on how we can figure out how to do this. Okay, bottom line, federal law is the label is the law. You've all heard that term? The label is the law. If it says it on the pesticide label, that is federal law. It's also state law. It's something if you know, if it says apply 10 gallons and you apply 100 gallons, I'm going to be the one that comes and says, what were you thinking? You broke the law. Okay? You have to follow the label. So there's no labels that say, go ahead and put this on marijuana. Not a one. You won't find it. Not as long as it's federally illegal. Okay, so we have to look at this, how specific the labels are. Question? No? Okay. So if a product says you can only apply it to wheat, that's it. Wheat. That's all you get to apply it to. If a product says you can apply it to cereal grains, you can apply it to wheat, barley, oats, you know, a whole bunch. Because pesticides are approved at the federal level. So you will never see the word marijuana on a pesticide label. And we cannot approve something that violates federal law. But I'm telling you, there is some language flexibility. So here's where I'm getting into here. If it says wheat, only wheat. If it says cereal grains, you've got a lot of options, okay? If the label says you can only apply it to greenhouse tomatoes, just tomatoes. But if it says greenhouse plants, you're in, okay? I don't think hemp is going to be on a label either, because I don't think hemp cultivation is legal. Well, I'm not going to argue with you there, but when it comes to what you're going to find on a pesticide label and you can't violate the label, don't use a product that says only put it on tomatoes. Use a product that says put it on greenhouse plants. Then you're not violating federal law. Okay, so we're just talking about the regulatory stuff here, and I realize it doesn't make a lot of sense, but this is what we're dealing with, so this is the information you need to know to not break federal law.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, you know, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Activism begins with ACT. The Marijuana Agenda features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's Activist Agenda.
Today in the Activist Agenda, we go back to a couple of days ago at the Cannabis Classic here in Anchorage, Alaska. It took place at the Sullivan Arena, the parking lot outside, and Saturday was a gorgeous sunny day. Sunday was a little more like Portland, kind of dark and rainy, but across from the seminar tent was the Dab Stars booth. They won the best booth at the event, and no doubt because our good friend Jonah Tacoma was running the show there from Dab Stars, and he's always a crowd pleaser. He helped lead us in an epic 420 celebration that took place on Saturday. We've got the video from it right now.
All right, tighten up. Let's go. All right, let's do it.
As he started going to my own, like, oh, what the hell?
They say you can't do the myth and there's no weapon. So we work hard to keep it within the confines of the rules, but we also have a good time, right?
Yeah!
Okay, so let's do this, dude. Okay, so we do have a little bit of time here. All right, Dave, I think you got nominated to start that one.
Yeah, Dave!
So these big old logs are from Ryan. All right, so Mama here is the one that said she would pay the $400 for the cigar and still smoke it with you guys. So. All right, who wants to light this?
Woo!
You know, we got some girl power in here. So look, this was not a possibility a few years ago. This is the reality that you guys have created. And this is the future of cannabis as long as you stay in control of it. So continue to vote. Continue to make sure they don't fuck you out of your rights, because in a year they have a chance to take this back from you. But if you show them the value of cannabis, and you show them that you guys are a vocal majority and not a minority, then they can't take shit from you, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Much love to Alaska Cannabis.
Yeah.
Tup, tup, tup. Oh, yeah.
Pass it around. I'll get it. I'll get it, man. Let's try it. All right, you guys want to open this expensive fucking thing, right?
Yeah!
We've been watching these on the internet.
Dave, come here.
I actually did such a bad job opening this on our live show that they put on a video on how to open it, and I still don't remember how you do it. So I'm going to massacre the shit out of it.
I think they carry like a...
Oh, I'm sure I'm doing this the wrong way, and then so many people are recording it, they're going to be so pissed.
Dave Nyberg called it.
Oh, time out, time out.
Oh, he's got a knife! Oh,
he's got it!
Welcome to Alaska. That is actually a Spanish pocket sword.
Put that in your checked bag. Do not try to take that home in your carry-on.
Oh, shit. Well, we opened the end of it, but that'll be all right. We're supposed to cut that off anyway.
Just ready to use here.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Oh, look at that.
Yes, we
will. Stick your nub in there. All right. So, I personally don't believe a cigar should cost $400, but there are $400 cigars out there. So, thanks to your community, you're going to get to smoke one.
Yeah, bye to
that. Security literally went, okay.
They're happy that we're out here. Right? They
we acknowledge them, they acknowledge us. We're good to go, I think. All right, you got a puff.
Alaska's nothing but respect, really man.
Steam rolling. You feel like a boss? Right? Look, cannabis represents social mobility to a lot of you guys. Because in America, you're pretty much born with the amount of money that you're going to have in your life. We have a system where rich people own everything. And it's because their grandparents passed that shit on to them. So cannabis is yours to pass on to your kids. But you don't take advantage of that shit, you miss out. So this is your time. Alaska is a perfect example of a community that's just getting together. There's, what, two concentrate companies, right? So get out there and do your thing. She looks so excited.
Yeah, she's ready.
Jessica, where's the... Where's my camera?
Look,
you guys made her cry. That's a community, right? You see a lot of different colors, shapes, and sizes out here, and that's the reality, is that we cross all boundaries. And cannabis means so many things to so many people. And even you guys that feel like you have nothing wrong with you, you're treating stress, you're treating insomnia, you're treating all the fucked up shit of just dealing with life, and you're not using pills. Do that at home when you're all fucked up tonight.
Wow, that's lovely.
Isn't that great?
Great taste to it.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun. Beautiful.
Yeah, Brandon, what up?
Hey!
Oh, can we get a group photo, yes?
Yeah!
All right, Jessica here is the official Dab Star photographer, so we're all going to tighten up.
Yeah,
Dab Star! What's up, Radical Rose?
Hey! A great time with Jonah Tacoma and all the folks there from Dab Stars as we counted down 420 here in Anchorage, Alaska on a beautiful day for the Cannabis Classic. Stay tuned because coming up in hour two, we've got live guests right here in Anchorage to talk about the Cannabis Classic. Presenters and winners will be right here live for all of hour two. But coming up next, our Northeast Cannabis Chronicle, Eli Harrington joins us talking about Vermont legalization when we return.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Marijuana Agenda, Kevin Sabet's boogeyman since 2012.
You have offended my family, and you have offended Shaman Temple.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for a cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Welcome to the Northeast Cannabis Chronicle. Today, we catch you up on the latest news and speak with an expert from the Northeast region of the United States, from New England to the Mid-Atlantic, including the evolution of consumer cannabis in Massachusetts and Maine. Now, let's return to the birthplace of our nation in this edition of the Northeast Cannabis Chronicle.
Welcome to the Northeast Cannabis Chronicle. I'm Russ Belville. Joining us today is another fine podcaster from the Northeast. We've got Eli Harrington joining us. Eli, welcome to the show.
Hey, Russ, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor. Big fan of your work. All frequent listener.
Oh, thank you very much. Let's tell our listeners a little bit about your podcast if they're interested in getting into much more fine detail about what's going on in the state of Vermont.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, like everything else with Vermont cannabis, things are evolving quickly. And I started Vermontawana as a podcast, I think about 6 or 8 months ago. I was interested in the format. I was doing some writing on a blog called Vermontawana. And I've actually co-founded a site called Heady Vermont, H-E-A-D-Y, with my partner Monica. So the podcast has been a really fun way to engage with folks. As a former video guy, you don't always have time to do video, especially when you're starting up and bootstrapping. So yeah, the Vermontawana podcast, it's on iTunes, we're on SoundCloud. You know, we talk to people who are here in Vermont, whether they're politicians, and we talk to other folks around the industry. We were just at NECAN not too long ago, talking with Mark Shepard and those kinds of guys. So, you know, and we're rapidly expanding. So, you know, Vermont as a cannabis market is a place that's kind of just waking up to everything that folks like you guys have been doing for years out west. So there's a lot of information to share, a lot of cool products to talk about, a lot of businesses and organizations that we want to promote. So it's a great place to be. And, you know, we're happy to be the first and so far only cannabis media outlets who are talking about this with the perspective of compassionate, informed locals who are certainly not out there for the money. So, you know, shout out to any of the sponsors out there in New England, too.
Well, that's fantastic. And Vermont, we've got our eyes on Vermont because you guys are poised to become the first state to pass adult cannabis use legalization without having to go through the initiative process like we had to in the first 8 states. Tell us your feelings about how that has proceeded through the legislature, because I know they had to make some compromises that we weren't too happy with.
Well, that's exactly it, you know, and I think to step back, I think there are, I think Keith Straub just wrote there are 26 states that do not have ballot initiatives, right? So the Vermont Constitution, the only way something becomes law is through the legislature, right? So there are no binding referendums. And what that does, if you think about cannabis movements around the country, typically, you know, you'll have one or two or three different groups that'll organize. Ideally, they come together. But there's kind of a clear tent, you know, there's a yes, there's a pro, and there's a no. Without having that referendum process, people have to make a lot more decisions about which aspects of laws they will and will not support. And I think that's something that we learned last year going through the process where we had a regulate bill that, you know, people described as corporate, and it did not allow for home grow. So you had last year in 2016, a governor who wanted it to happen, but advocates, it was hard to organize, and, you know, cannabis folks are naturally independent. It was hard to get people to find those compromises, and ultimately, because that home cultivation and legalization and criminal justice aspect wasn't included, we had a lot of folks who, you know, were huge proponents and had been in the trenches for decades. You know, folks like Fran from Vermont Homegrown, who I know has been on the show, you know, who had to say, draw a line. And so in some cases like Ohio, you'll have places where there are referendums and people say, this is just too bad. I can't support it. It's not progress at all. In places like Maine, you'll have compromises where, you know, there'll be fractures, but people will come together and kind of suck it up. But for the rest of us, you know, it really is issue by issue, because you have to weigh the, you have to do a lot of political calculation. And at the end of the day, you not only have to convince the voters that it's okay, but, you know, you have to convince the elected officials. And most of them don't know much about cannabis, don't necessarily want to know much about cannabis. You know, so it's a, it's been an interesting process up here in Vermont. And I would say the biggest lesson that we can take out of this, and the one that's really important to share with folks, is really building those coalitions, you know, and building real coalitions and having people who will go out there as individuals who are leaders in those communities and talk to other, you know, growers, or talk to other media folks, or talk to other, you know, online activists and say, you know, this is why this compromise can or cannot work. Here's why it will or will not work. And to actually have people who understand the politics and say, well, listen, you know, we're not going to get six plants here in Vermont this year. I think that the toughest compromise was waiting an extra year for legalization. But we came close to being in a spot where you had people who were generally favorable to reform saying, I want regulation, but I'm not interested in legalization. And other folks saying, I want the criminal justice reform, but I don't want the regulation. So I got to say, I think the strategy of separating the issues early in the year was really a good one. You know, take legalization as one issue, take regulation as one issue. And then the compromise that happened at the end of the year was even more impressive, because it really is, it is something that I think everybody can live with and still, like you said, is a historic step forward. I mean, convince, you know, 180 people, the majority of whom are senior citizens, when you're talking, you know, when the people on the other side of the table are teachers and cops, that's really tough to do. So we're just lucky there have been a lot of grassroots advocates here in Vermont and around the country, you know, who are giving us the evidence, who are sharing the facts, you know, who are pointing to the sky not falling. And, you know, again, it's, if it weren't for the OG activists and people who have sacrificed so much, we wouldn't be able to do this. And I couldn't get on Twitter and, you know, and put facts out there that you share.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to me how, as legislatures now are tackling this issue, you've got Vermont moving forward with allowing home grow but not pot shops. You got New Jersey moving forward with allowing pot shops but no home grow. It's really weird how this shakes out. And the latest step, of course, is now that the legislature has passed this, it's sitting or making its way to the desk of Governor Phil Scott, the Republican in Vermont. And he seems a little reticent to want to sign this, and he cites highway safety. I looked up the figures. It seems like Vermont's a pretty safe place to drive, and you guys have been smoking a lot of pot for quite a while. So what's going on there with the governor?
You know, it's a safe place to do a lot of things. You know, another interesting stat about Vermont, we think of it as being this hippie liberal place. Vermont, there's almost no gun control. You know, we have some of the loosest gun laws in the country, but we also barely have any gun violence. Huh. So I think people can come to terms with this idea. You know, Governor Scott, he's somebody who's been fairly moderate. You know, he's somebody who's been more practical and kind of get along. Not coming from the legislature, he's not kind of a deal maker. But, you know, we're lucky here in this state where we have our lieutenant governor, David Zuckerman. This guy has been advocating publicly and running on the issue since the 90s. Worked for Bernie, organic farmer with a ponytail, right? We have him as our lieutenant governor and Phil Scott as our Republican governor. So, you know, I think it kind of shows you that I think Vermonters in general are more issue conscious than party conscious. And that's something that's really benefited us. So, you know, if we're handicapping it, I go back in history and I think about 2004 when S-76, our medical marijuana law, passed, which again, that was a way more difficult battle. With people having to do so much. I mean, you know, Mark Tucci is the guy who inspired me, one of the original Vermont patients here. At that point in time, we had Governor Jim Douglas, who was way more conservative. He's getting calls from the Bush White House telling him to veto this thing. And ultimately he says, I'm not going to support this. I oppose it. I don't like marijuana. I don't think medical marijuana should happen, but I'm going to respect the will of the legislature and the will of the people. So I think ultimately things are being drawn out here quite a bit in Vermont. But I really think that ultimately that's where we're going to get to, where the governor can say, listen, I don't support this, you know, keep all his friends in law enforcement happy. Say, I don't support this, I don't endorse this, but the process has happened, you know, all this time and energy has been spent to pass this bill, and I'm not going to stand in the way of that.
Yeah, we hope that is the outcome for the state of Vermont. And it's very interesting to me, too, how you went from having a previous governor, Pete Shumlin, who was quite supportive of the issue, to this Republican governor, Phil Scott. And like you mentioned, Vermont seems to be more issue than party. I mean, you're the state that gave us Bernie Sanders and Pat Leahy, for God's sake. And
damn right.
So is it safe to say, though, that a Vermont Republican might be a different sort of animal than your typical, say, Texas or Alabama Republican?
Well, that is certainly safe to say, and I think we're very proud of that. You know, I mean, traditionally, there were 100 years. It took 100 years for Vermont to get a Republic or a Democratic governor here. You know, I mean, the party is what's changed from 1860 to, you know, Phil Hoff in, I think, 1960 or 64. It was only Republicans, and they used to have the East-West rule where there was a Republican in the Senate from the east side of the state and then one from the west side of the state. So, you know, it's a place where I think it's really more libertarian. Vermont is a live and let live kind of place. You know, we don't tell you who to love. We don't tell you what to do in your house. We don't make you register your weapons. But, you know, if you got to get pulled out of a ditch or get your driveway shoveled out, we're going to help you. And I think ultimately it's that kind of coming together. And you got to remember, Vermont's a tiny place population-wise. So, you know, I think kind of community-level discussions really matter more here. And you have people who are willing to step outside of a party orthodoxy and look at the issue. I mean, we have one of the senators, Joe Benning. He's a Republican from the Northeast Kingdom. You know, this is a guy who became a lawyer because he got a BS pot bust when he was in high school in New Jersey in the 70s. You know, so he's somebody who's up in the reddest part of the state as a registered Republican and saying, look, here's a common sense thing I know from experience. So I think we're really lucky because being such a small state, having a really accessible democracy, you get to hear more of those stories. And our legislators are people we run into all the time. You know, they're people that we know, they're coaches and teachers and farmers and all that good stuff. So, you know, they're listening. And I think they really deserve credit because a lot of them were not ready to go along with us and not want to talk about this, you know, and we're really nervous, especially a lot of moderate Democrats. You know, I mean, a lot of folks who are getting pressure from their school boards, they have Democrat next to their name and they're in Chittenden County, you know, right in Burlington, one of the most liberal place in the country. So I do think we are very, very fortunate. And I think that, again, it's a credit to grassroots lobbying efforts. And it's people getting out there, making phone calls, showing up, you know, putting stuff on Facebook. You know, it's not just buying advertising and making TV ads and slogans. You need that stuff too. And we've had, you know, a lot of great help from the national partners. I mean, MPP's been in here for the last few years, very active. But, you know, really at the end of the day, it's people stepping up and being able to say publicly, I support this. This is common sense. Let's turn the page for a better Vermont. So I got to give our representatives credit for listening because a lot of them came a long way in the course of 1, 2 years, 6 months, you know, 1 month in the case of some of them who we had to convince. And ultimately that's why the bill ended up being, you know, less than a lot of people would have liked and slower than a lot of people would have liked. But, you know, I think appreciating that effort is really important, recognizing that. So, you know, it all starts from the grassroots and from people who listen to this show, who are inspired, who are informed, who are passionate, who care about their communities. It's making those phone calls. It's getting their friends to do it. You know, social media and Twitter are free. These are a lot of tools. There are a lot more tools out there that don't cost money and cost time. So I think it's really encouraging from, like you said, the state that gave us Bernie. Grassroots politics, common sense, you know, and people getting involved can make an impact on any issue. And we're really happy that we've made this big step forward. And fingers are crossed and we're knocking on wood that our governor doesn't commit political suicide and derail this.
Let's hope so. Well, Eli Harrington, we appreciate you coming on the Marijuana Agenda to fill us in on some of the details that are happening there in Vermont. Please give our listeners the links back to your show if they want to check out more.
Yeah, definitely. So you can find, if you want to know everything that's going on in Vermont, you know, check out headyvermont.com. We put a ton of stuff out there all week. It's original content written by us. We're out there. I'm doing this full time. And the Vermontawana podcast. It's Vermont, Vermontijuana. The podcast, it's on SoundCloud and it's on iTunes. And we are going to have a fun episode coming up soon. But if people want to get a little bit more info on the political calculations behind the scene, we just talked about that in a recent episode, and have some really good stuff coming up, and including hopefully what's next with a post-signed bill.
All right. Well, Eli, thanks for joining us again, and good luck with everything going on there in Vermont.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. Subscribe now for free at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
It's time for Cannabis Facts About Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the gay agenda, only with better music.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cannabis Sports Medicine from the Gridiron Cannabis Coalition. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Well, nothing gets my Facebook page roiling these days like stating the simple fact that cannabidiol is a Schedule I controlled substance under federal law and illegal under most state laws. But our CBD oil is produced from hemp, so it is legal in all 50 states, comes the inevitable reply, sometimes with colorful language expressing the commenter's opinion of my intellect. I've run down the legalese before. I've shown readers in plain language how cannabidiol and all cannabinoids derived from the resins of cannabis plants are quite clearly considered illegal drugs by the DEA. But our CBD oil is extracted from the stalks of hemp plants, so it's legal in all 50 states. I've run down the botany before. I've shown readers the scientific studies declaring that nothing but trace amounts of cannabinoids are found in the stalk, and most of that is found in resin sticking to the stalk, and anything that comes from resin is illegal. But maybe all the legal and scientific jargon are just too much to wade through. So, let's just apply some common sense, people. If CBD from hemp were already legal in all 50 states, why did 16 states go through the trouble of passing CBD oil laws for epileptic kids? if CBD from hemp were already legal federally, then why are there three separate bills proposed in the federal Congress right now to remove CBD from the Controlled Substances Act? Now, look, I don't care if you want to buy some CBD oil on the internet from someone who's charging you an arm and leg for it. And I don't care if companies want to sell you that CBD oil in defiance of prohibition. I do care, though, when for-profit companies falsely entice their customers into breaking laws without their informed consent. Real people are being busted for this allegedly legal in all 50 states cannabidiol oil, facing real consequences when they and their families were completely unaware of them, thanks to this nonstop proselytizing for profit of the false gospel of legal hemp CBD. The owner of Tobacco Depot stores in Alexander and Watford City is now facing up to 40 years in prison, reads the first line of a story in Bismarck, North Dakota, Wednesday. The owner says he's spoken to all of the companies that sold him the products tested, and they were all outraged over the process and have told him the products were legal for sale, and they will help him in the legal process. Well, it's hard to blame that guy. Just 2 weeks earlier, Bismarck's news station proclaimed that CBD oil is, quote, sold in all 50 states and has some of the same effects as medical marijuana, and, quote, anyone can use it, end quote. They even interviewed another store owner who explained that the CBD oil, quote, is from the hemp plant. That makes it legal for us to sell it, end quote. Another story. A Fredericksburg man was arrested last night after the Kerrville Narcotics Unit raided his family home looking for cannabis oil. This was a story in Texas from last September. The man and his wife operate an online natural health store selling hemp-based CBD oil. And who could blame him? As the Texas media reported it, quote, according to a recent press release put out by the Texas Hemp Industries Association, cannabidiol derived from a legal industrial hemp plant is an essential oil like lavender or peppermint and is not subject to the regulation established by the Texas Compassionate Use Act, end quote. Here's a story from Illinois just last Thursday. A drug task force raided a downtown Edwardsville shop suspected of selling cannabis oils. Officers reported purchasing cannabidiol edibles and oil. Nobody's been charged yet, but police found 63 containers of products, such as Relax CBD syrup. Which suggests if they're an ounce apiece, they could be facing a 3-year mandatory minimum sentence in state prison. Even in the states where cultivation and use of marijuana, chock full of CBD and THC, is legal for all adults, you can still get busted over CBD oil if you cross state borders with it or fail to adhere to state regulations on it. In my home state of Oregon, a Brookings man this month allegedly tried to ship marijuana products to his sister in California who is battling cancer. Police seized the shipment, which the man protested because CBDs and terpenes are legal in all 50 states. The same goes for Taunton, Massachusetts, where two detectives came in late Tuesday morning to inform a convenience store owner, it's still not legal to sell ingestible products containing either the intoxicating element THC or cannabidiol, also known as CBD. Even where I'm talking to you right now, right here in Alaska, enforcement officers seized items from several stores in the state that contained cannabidiol oil. This was in Wasilla back in February. Now, maybe the companies and associations shilling for the legal hemp oil fantasy will devote serious money and legal resources to defend all these families who believed their mistaken legal interpretation. It'd be great if they won, but they won't, because the law is clear. I think prohibition of cannabis in all forms is unconstitutional under the Ninth Amendment, but I'm not going to sell you some marijuana products in Idaho or Kansas at highly inflated prices and tell you it's legal in all 50 states because I have some novel legal theory. Don't fool yourself into believing your CBD dealer's promises.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
All right, folks, that's all the time we got for hour one. Stay tuned. Hour two is next. We're live from Anchorage with a special roundtable of Alaska's cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roam it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.